So to avoid the frivolous pile, what you need to do is articulate a reason for review under Rule 66.3 or a reason that's in the spirit of Rule 66.3 and focus on the Court of Appeals opinion. Don't focus on what the trial court did wrong. Tell us what the Court of Appeals did wrong. Now, Rule 66.3 gives you a number of possible reasons for review. And I say you can also, these reasons are not exclusive. They're not comprehensive. If you have a different reason that's not in the list that shows the significance of your issue and your case to the state's criminal jurisprudence, then you can assert a different reason that's not specifically listed in Rule 66.3. And sometimes we do get some really good possible reasons, but make sure that it's something that demonstrates the significance of your case. And I'm going to list these reasons for you, but I want you to pay attention to something that's really important. The heavy lifting for being prepared for saying what your reason for review is, you really should do that way back when you have filed your brief in the Court of Appeals. So reasons for review include that the opinion in your case is in conflict on the same issue with an opinion from another relevant court, or the Court of Appeals has decided an important issue of law that the Court of Criminal Appeals should decide. Maybe they've declared a statute unconstitutional, or they misread the statute or the rule in question. They've issued a split opinion on the question that you want reviewed, or they've so far departed from the usual and accepted course of judicial proceedings, or they've allowed a trial court to do that, such that this court should exercise its discretionary review and supervise the lower courts. Examples of such departures include using the wrong standard of review, misanalyzing some legal question that has a typical legal standard, or misreading the record altogether. So when you file your brief in the Court of Appeals, you should already know what your record says, how to evaluate the statute in question, what are the arguments in favor of or against its constitutionality. All these things you'll be prepared for, so that if the Court of Appeals does, heaven forbid, issue an opinion that goes against you, you can immediately spot what the reason for review is. You don't want to be scrambling around looking for contrary opinions at the last minute. You want to already know that at the time you file your brief, and also you want to keep up with that during the pendency of your appeal. So be on the lookout and articulate a standard of review that meets the criteria of 66.3 or is like Rule 66.3 reasons for review. So what else can you do if you avoid the frivolous pile? What can you do to increase the odds of getting your PDR granted? Well, two factors that we do consider. Number one, are we likely to reverse the Court of Appeals? This is a pretty important factor because it's not enough just that the Court of Appeals has an opinion that's different from another Court of Appeals. You want to demonstrate that the Court of Appeals in your case was wrong, and that improves the odds that your PDR will be granted. And then another consideration is whether the Court of Appeals opinion was published, because of course, if it was published, then that gives it a higher profile. It makes it more significant because it has precedential value. The unpublished opinions are not of precedential value, and so they're not as significant to the jurisprudence of the state. So if you lose in the Court of Appeals and you think that you're going to file a PDR and the Court of Appeals has designated its opinion to be unpublished, you might consider making a motion under Rule 47 to have them change that designation to published. They would have to do that before you file your PDR, because I think once you file your PDR, they would lose jurisdiction over that. But that's just one little thing you might consider doing. On the other hand, if you win in the Court of Appeals and they've designated their opinion to be unpublished, you might consider not making such a motion, because if you did get them to publish it, that might improve your opponent's odds of getting his PDR granted. So, one other thing you might consider is whether your case has some interesting or unusual facts. Never discount entertainment value as a means of raising the profile of your case. We all like a good story, and sometimes that could tip the scales in your balance and get your PDR granted where it might not otherwise. So if you can squeeze in a little something in there in your PDR that tells us how interesting or unusual your case is, more power to you. So what about replies to PDRs? You do not need to reply to a PDR if you are just going to repeat what the Court of Appeals said. If you don't have anything to add to their opinion and it was sound and perfectly good, then don't waste your time filing a reply to a PDR. But on the other hand, if you can demonstrate an alternative reason for upholding the Court of Appeals opinion, that would be a good reply to a PDR. So for example, if the Court of Appeals said that error wasn't preserved, maybe you would be able to say that even if the issue had been preserved, it wasn't even error, or maybe it was harmless. That would be a good reply. Another good reply would be if the petitioner is making arguments or relying on legal theories that he didn't offer in the Court of Appeals. You should file a reply and say, these arguments were not considered by the Court of Appeals, and so really the petitioner is asking you to evaluate the Court of Appeals opinion for reasons that the Court of Appeals was not aware of. This is a good reply to a PDR, but once we've granted review, then it's not going to be such a good argument, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute.